We're pulling back the curtain on a really pivotal moment in history, Session 11 of the Council of Chalcedon, 451 AD. And our mission, really, is to unearth some of the hidden power plays, the procedural quirks that maybe explain why a major branch of Christianity, the Oriental Orthodox Churches, why they ultimately rejected Chalcedon's authority.
Exactly. And so Chalcedon aimed for legitimacy, for order. But interestingly, its own records admit the circumstances did not permit truth and justice to reign undisturbed.
Mm.
And we're going to see that really vividly through one quite contentious local dispute, actually, back in Ephesus.
Okay, yeah, let's unpack that. This messy saga from Ephesus with the two rival bishops, Bassianus and Stephen.
Mm-hmm.
So Bassianus' initial ordination, it was already problematic, right? Violated Canon 15 of Nicaea.
Absolutely. A clear violation. That canon was specifically meant to stop bishops moving between cities like that, preventing power grabs.
But it got worse. I mean, the description.
Oh, much worse. His actual enthronement. Well, the accounts mention a huge crowd, a naked dagger.
A naked dagger?
Yeah, and blood on the altar. There are even claims that members of his household suffered, quote, death by various blows.
Wow. That sounds less like church business and more like, I don't know, a gang takeover.
It's pretty shocking language. And then you contrast that with Stephen.
Okay, what was his story?
Well, Stephen's story is quite different. He was apparently elected by a broad consensus. We're talking 40 Asian bishops involved.
40. Okay.
And he even had imperial approval from Theodosius II, who was, you know, quite involved in church affairs.
So he seemed legitimate.
He did. Yet, fast forward to session 11 at Chalcedon, the imperial officials just walk in and deliver this prescripted judgment.
Prescripted?
Seems like it. Declaring both Bassianus and Stephen unworthy.
Both of them. Just like that.
It's just like that. And the reaction from the bishops, they immediately acclaimed it.
Immediately?
Yeah. A just judgment. A judgment of God, they apparently shouted. It feels very much like manufactured consensus, not real deliberation.
That is. Well, convenient, isn't it? A prescripted judgment acclaimed as divine will.
Hmm.
For a council that's supposed to be about justice, especially after Ephesus II, how do you just sweep these really serious accusations under the rug? Blood on the altar.
Well, that's the thing. It strongly suggests they were prioritizing maybe political expediency. A clean slate.
Avoid the messiness.
Exactly. Avoid digging into potentially more scandalous details that might undermine the very image they were trying so hard to project. Easier to just, you know, move on, get everyone in line.
But it wasn't just about getting rid of those two, was it? There was more going on.
Oh, definitely. Beyond just deposing them, the debate about where the new bishop of Ephesus would be consecrated, that revealed something deeper.
Okay, what was that?
It exposed this issue of extortionate consecration fees being demanded by Constantinople.
Fees, like money changing hands for a bishop's consecration.
Exactly, and significant amounts, apparently. The Asian bishops were desperate. The records show them pleading, "Have mercy on us, our children will perish, and the city will be ruined if they had to pay these fees in Constantinople."
Good grief. Our children will perish. That's not just procedural, that's existential.
It shows this wasn't just theology. It was a real financial and power struggle. You see Constantinople trying to centralize control, asserting its dominance, even financially, over these regional churches, a clear systemic bias.
So pulling this together, what does it tell us about Chalcedon overall? They condemn the violence of Ephesus II.
Right. They position themselves as the righteous alternative.
But then when similar issues, violence, maybe procedural shortcuts, clear power plays pop up within their own proceedings.
They seem to overlook them or find these very expedient solutions when it suits the bigger agenda.
Which seems to be centralizing power in Constantinople.
That appears to be a major undercurrent, yes. Order and imperial alignment, maybe even financial control, sometimes seem to trump a messy, thorough pursuit of justice.
So if we connect that to the big picture, the rejection by the Oriental Orthodox churches.
Well, these examples become really concrete reasons, don't they?
Yeah.
You have imperial overreach, basically politicians dictating church decisions. You have established church law, like Canon 15, being subordinated to political will.
Selective justice?
Selective justice, yeah. That clean slate approach. And then this financial exploitation, these fees.
It paints a picture of a council that, for the Oriental Orthodox, felt deeply politically compromised.
Precisely. Yeah. It wasn't only about the complex theological debates over Christ's nature, those were central. It was also fundamentally about power, about fairness, about whether this council truly represented divine justice or imperial maneuvering.
It's such a stark reminder, isn't it, that these grand historical moments, these big church councils, they have these really messy human, sometimes political, sometimes financial underbellies.
Absolutely. History rarely fits into neat boxes.
So for you listening, what really stands out about how power and justice and maybe just plain money got tangled up here? And how might those same kinds of dynamics still shape institutions even today? Something to think about.